I'd like to call the Health and Social Services Committee to order at 1:30 p.m. on Friday, February 20th, 2017. Today we are meeting in room 205 in the Capitol Building. Please make sure your cell phones are on silent during this meeting. Committee members present today are Senator Van Imhoff, Senator Giesel, Senator Begich. We're expecting Senator Michicki to join us shortly, and myself, Senator Wilson. First up this afternoon is...
Bless you.
Hello.
First up this afternoon is Senate Bill 20, listing U-47700 as a controlled substance by Senator Meyer. Before us today is a committee substitute, 30-LS0319/D. This is Senator Van Imhoff.
Okay. I move to adopt worked draft 30-LS0319/D as the committee substitute.
Is there an objection to adopting this CS?
I object for the purposes of discussion.
Senator Vinoa.
So I invite, it's not.
Oh, right. Yes, I know.
Invite Senator Meyer or staff.
Senator Meyer and your staff are welcome to approach for further discussion. And please introduce yourself, Ms. Mary Ziegen, for the record. And before we begin, I just want to put on the record that Senator Michicki just joined us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Please continue. I apologize.
For the record, my name is Christine Marisigan, staff to Senator Kevin Meyer. I'm here to explain the changes in the new CS that is before you. On page 4, line 30, we corrected the misspelling, adding a Z in the word. That was brought up by Dr. Butler when we met last. On page 4, line 31, there's a new section 2. This new section continues on page 5, lines 1 through 6, which basically inserts the language to have tramadol be a schedule for a controlled substance, thus bringing Alaska statute in line with what has already happened on the national level with tramadol.
Are there any questions for the bill sponsor and staff about the changes? Do we still have the objection?
No, I remove my objection.
Thank you, Senator Vinama. Are there any other further amendments? Great. With no other further objections, we will adopt version D. We'll take a...
No, I'm going to, at this time, entertain a motion.
I will entertain a motion to pass this bill from our committee to the next committee of referral.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Michicki.
Can I just make a statement before you get to that point?
Yes, sir.
The things that I've been looking at to try to be more of a catch-all going forward, I just think need more work. This definitely improves the situation, and I'm very supportive of the bill. And I'll be getting with those that are experts in this area, one of them sitting to my right, to work on some of the other recommendations going forward. So, thank you.
I appreciate that, and I think we all would like a more in-depth solution to this matter that plugs our communities and... Senator Meyer, sponsor of the bill?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, if I may, I certainly agree with Senator Michicki, and I think we had really good discussion on this topic and how we need to come up with a system so that we can react quicker, faster, be a little more nimble than waiting for us to come into session and then go through the process of passing a law. Although we are creating a new law with a pretty severe crime, so I think it does deserve a deliberative process, but I would agree that I think certainly Senator Giesel and her opioid task force might be a good place to start the discussion or this committee, and we're certainly very supportive and want to help in any way we can. But at least what this will do now is get this particular bill or this particular drug, which we know is currently a serious problem, unlawful and against the law, so that the police force can now start implementing the appropriate penalties. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Meyer, and that is the plan in future weeks to have a opportunity for the Trooper Drug Task Force and the opioid task force to present before this committee for to look at some other options to we can solve this problem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there any objection to Senator Vandemoff's motion to move this bill from our committee?
So I move the committee substitute for Senate Bill 20, Version D, from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Objection? All right, seeing none, CS for Bill 20, Version D, is moved from our committee, and we'll take a brief at ease to sign the document. Back on record. Well, now I'll take an overview of SB 32, Prescription for Biological Products, which is sponsored by Senator Shelley Hughes. My intent is to hear the bill today, take public testimony, and consider amendments, and set the bill aside for future discussion. At this time, Senator Hughes and staff, please approach, and you may begin when you're ready. And just please remember to state your name for the record.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Shelley Hughes, Senator for District F, Tugak, Palmer, and with me today is Amy Bushnell, who has been working hard on this bill. Thank you for taking the time out and carving it into your busy schedule. SB 32, Prescriptions for Biological Products. It will provide Alaskans with safe access to new FDA-approved treatment options called interchangeable biological products. Under current state law, pharmacists can prescribe lower-cost generic drugs for the prescribed drug, but currently there's absolutely no provision pertaining to biologic medicines. The urgency of this bill is twofold. One is that right now a pharmacist could technically substitute a biosimilar for a biologic product and not be in violation of state law, because we don't have anything preventing that. The second, I said it was twofold, the second reason is within estimated about a year, maybe less, FDA will begin to be approving interchangeable biologic products. We've had biologic products around for years. Humira is one that is used for arthritis as an example. But now being developed are what are these biosimilars, and there are also a number of those on the market, which a doctor now can prescribe and a pharmacist can dispense in Alaska. What we're talking about is a new category of interchangeable biosimilars. A generic drug is chemically based, and so it can be reproduced identically, the chemistry, the cellular structure. A biological product is different. It's made from a living organism. And so a biosimilar does not have an absolutely identical structure to the original biological product. So a biosimilar is going to be, as the word indicates, similar, but not absolutely identical. However, the new category that FDA is working on, the interchangeable, the goal will be that it will be extremely similar, so that the if a substitute were dispensed, it would be expected that there would not be the adverse reactions of something that quite different. So I hope that explains why we're bringing this forward. And it actually, it also will be very good for the state of Alaska as far as the Medicaid budget. Missouri, now they perhaps went out on a bit of a limb. All the states that have passed it so far have indicated they expect to see savings as far as Medicaid and also for family budgets. But Missouri went on to say that they expect that they could possibly overall between the federal and state Medicaid budget see a savings of over $100 million a year. Of course, they have a much bigger population, so I certainly wouldn't expect that those kind of numbers at all for Alaska. But as you know, every dollar counts at this point in Alaska. So I will hand things over to Amy at this point. She can run through a sectional analysis if you'd like. She could also, I'd like her to highlight a few more points that I haven't yet shared with you, and she's also available for questions. And I want to mention, too, that we have a medical doctor, Dr. Charles, David Charles, online for questions, as well as a pharmacist online with the Arizona College of Pharmacy, and that is Dr. Philip Schneider. So, if it's with your permission, Mr. Chair, Amy is available to give a sectional analysis if you like.
Please do.
For the record, my name is Amy Bushnell. I'm a staffer to Senator Hughes. If I might, Mr. Chair, have a brief intro to the bill again. SB 32 follows model consensus language that has been worked on extensively and agreed by numerous patient advocacy groups, along with prescriber association groups and pharmacists throughout the country. Most of these specialty organizations and patient organizations use biologics primarily in treating specialty and serious conditions like cancer, rheumatoid arthritis, MS, and other neurological disorders. There's been also significant outreach and discussion with Alaska stakeholders for months, some of which may be testifying today. And if it's all right with you, Mr. Chair, I'd like to also mention a few other points to add to what Senator Hughes has shared. To allow access to these interchangeable biologics with the necessary agreed-upon safety provisions, SB 32 provides four things. One, it defines the relevant terms of biological product, interchangeable biological product, consistent with federal law. It also limits substitution of biologics to only those biosimilars approved as interchangeable by the FDA. Furthermore, it preserves the ability for the prescriber to prevent substitution. It allows prescribers to write dispense as written to keep the patient taking what they believe is in their best interest. It also requires the pharmacist to maintain communication with the prescriber of the specific drug dispensed by electronic means, if accessible, and if not by phone, fax, or prevailing means, and to maintain a record. So it won't be to just the pharmacist's discretion. There is also communication involved between the prescriber, the pharmacist, and the patient. And if you'd like, Mr. Chairman, I can read a sectional on the 10 sections of the bill.
Yes, please continue.
Section 1 requires that the pharmacy board post a link to the FDA list of all currently approved interchangeable biological products on the board's website. Section 2 requires certain information be included on the label when a biological product is dispensed. Section 3 provides definitions for the required labeling in Section 2. Section 4, this is the substantive provision addressing the substitution for interchangeable biological products. It prevents substitution if the prescriber indicates dispense only as written. This is similar to what has already been in law for generic chemical drugs. It also provides that a pharmacist who substitutes a biologic in compliance with this section and law incurs no greater liability than what is incurred in filing the original prescription, also similar to what is already in law for generic chemical drugs. Section 5 provides for the communication and record-keeping requirements if an interchangeable drug is substituted. Section 6, it simply adds interchangeable biologic products to the meaning of substitute. Section 7 also gives a definition of biological product and interchangeable biological product to comport with federal law. Section 8 is adding transition regulations if necessary to implement changes made by the Act. Section 9 and 10 both add 4 effective dates for the bill.
This time, any questions from the committee members to the bill sponsor? Senator Vandemoff.
Okay, I have 2 questions. Is there, in a current doctor's prescription pad now, is he or she able to check a box that says no generic substitutions? I think they allow that now, but is there going to say no biosimilar substitutions, even if the FDA, just in case that this doctor has a reason to check that box?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, the pads are different, and one of your fellow committee members probably could tell you. My understanding that some have a place where they can check off dispense as written, or they can write that. And I also want to say, if a prescriber was concerned, they could mark that. But if they also want to keep their options open so that they might consider an interchangeable biologic, that they could also add a note that says, call if a substitute is available. And that would really give, I think, the prescriber the way to make sure that they would know exactly what the patient would or would not be taking.
Second question, yes.
So I also, thank you for that, I appreciate it. I see that something similar has passed in 26 states already, and sometimes there are questions from doctors on being notified within a certain time frame. Is that something, can you speak upon that? 2 days, 3 days, 1 day, 5 days, what are your thoughts?
Well, I will say this has been a big discussion across the country. You'll notice you did receive a lot of support letters, a lot of groups involved, and it was very thoroughly debated and vetted. And it was initially a tug of war because the pharmacists preferred to be able to just substitute like they do with the generics, and they didn't want to have to make a request or to even notify. On the other hand, the prescribers often wanted to make sure that a request came in first. Of course, the patient wants the medicine as soon as possible. And although a pharmacist making a request to the prescriber might instantaneously, that request electronically while the patient is standing at the counter would occur, the problem is that the response from the prescriber wouldn't come back while that count, very unlikely that response would come back while the patient is at the counter. And so bearing in mind the patient's needs and the fact that the prescriber, whether it's a nurse practitioner or a physician or a physician assistant, they can, as I indicated before, they can indicate dispense as written. And then they could also add an additional note, call if a substitute is available. And that seemed to be the consensus language across the nation that seems to work and addresses the needs of the busy pharmacist, the patient who needs the medicine right away, and the prescribers who want to make sure they know what their patients are taking.
Yes, one last quick question here. Do you know about the percentage of doctors that actually write as prescribed? And I'm a little bit more concerned upon there's a little bit more adverse effects for biologicals than it would be for a pill substitution or for medications, and how that subjectivity may happen because many doctors may not know upon the new regs and how the information dissemination will be dispersed to those doctors for the potential for these adverse side effects of substitution biological drugs.
Thank you for the question, Mr. Chair. And to be clear, once FDA begins to put medicines in this new category of interchangeable, they will be extremely similar. And as the testing is going on, what they're wanting to make sure is similar to a generic and no problem there. They're not going to want problems. And so if they are seeing adverse reactions, they will not be put on that list. And as far as the numbers of prescribers right now, it tends to be specialists, as Amy indicated, lupus, arthritis, some very serious kind of conditions that people usually will go to a specialist for care. I think as these come online, the specialists will be aware that they're available, and they're going to be so much more affordable for the patients. I also want to mention that right now the biological products are not inexpensive, and if a pharmacist is going to keep them on his or her shelf to be ready for a patient who might come in, they're going to need something like what we have here. Otherwise, they probably will not make those available, and Alaskans will miss out on this opportunity. So that's important to keep in mind, and one of the other reasons why it is important, because this is an affordable option, and it's going to be a safe option when FDA has approved these. So I think there's a bit of education yet that is being worked on in our state, as this is somewhat of a new concept. I also want to mention that generics we accept because they're chemically identical. There's a little bit of confusion because some think that we're going to take a biological product such as Humira that's been around for a long time, and we're just going to substitute a biosimilar. A biosimilar has not been approved to be interchangeable. That would not be good. And that's one of the reasons why we need this, because right now a pharmacist could do that. It would not be in violation of state law, and it could be the patient could have adverse effect. So it's really important to define this in law and make sure we're just talking about substituting the interchangeable biosimilars. So I know it's a bit confusing, but we need this now rather than later, for the biosimilars are out there, and then within, we expect 6 months or a year, we need it to address the interchangeable biosimilars.
Senator Baggage.
Senator Hughes, just one of my staff members is quite excited about this bill in a good way, so just so you know. But I did have a question. All the information I've received is very positive. Has there been any organized opposition whatsoever, or any opposition to this in here or in any of the states that you've reviewed? Is there any organized opposition to it?
Thank you. Through the chair, I'm not aware of any organizational opposition. I know there have been some prescribers that have been concerned, and originally, as I said before, there was a bit of tug of war between the prescribers and the pharmacists as the notification or permission, that whole question, and that was worked out. I do think that there may be some testimony today from a physician who's concerned, but I believe if physicians understand, they can write dispenses written, and they can also add a note, call if a substitute is available. It'll make sure that those needs are addressed. And also, I believe that patients who may be confused that they might be given a substitute that they might have an adverse reaction to, they're confused that one biological product, that the pharmacist would have the authority to substitute another biological product or another biosimilar. And we're not talking about that. We're talking about an FDA interchangeable that should not cause those kind of reactions that patients might be concerned about.
Follow up, Mr. Baggage?
Just a very quick comment. I had somebody did come to my office and provide a great presentation, which answered many of my questions, and I hope that they have an opportunity to talk to other members, because I think that will be helpful.
Another question, Senator Hughes. Most of these biological medications, as you mentioned, are not stocked on the shelves of pharmacies, and many of them are mail-ordered throughout. And I don't know the process of how many pharmacists, most of the clients or the folks I know that get biologics are normally get them directly from their doctor office. I'm not sure of that process of how that pharmacy interaction works, but they actually don't go to the pharmacy to pick up these medications. How does that play a part for the mail order pharmacies that sometimes mail these biologics to the state?
Thank you for the question, Mr. Chair. The Alaska Pharmacists Association, I believe, is online. I think they might be in the lineup for public testimony, but if you'd like them to answer that question, they might be available. And we also have, as I mentioned, the medical doctor and the pharmacist from the College of Pharmacy in Arizona that might be able to answer. I do not know about how the mail order works, and so
we can get to them.
Would defer to them. Thank you.
That'd be fine. Any other questions for the sponsor? Thank you, Senator. And Senator Richard, okay. At this time, we'll go ahead and start open public testimony for SB 32. And I believe first in the room is Rylan Hanks. And for public testimony, please try to keep our testimony to about 3 minutes.
So thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the committee for allowing me to speak with you today about this important subject. My name is Rylan Hanks. I'm a director of regulatory policy for Amgen on biosimilars. Amgen is a manufacturer of both innovative biologic medicines, and we've leveraged that experience over 35 years to start to make biosimilar medications as well. Because we see the value and the importance to the patients we serve. So I'm here today in support of SB 32. So really I'm going to provide a quick overview of some of the scientific concepts around what we're talking about here and to bring some clarity and hopefully some questions if you have any. So when we talk about, you know, medicines and how we use medicines, a lot of us traditionally think about the medicines we pick up at a pharmacy level, right? The tablets or the pills we have. In that same context, we understand some of the generic drugs that we're used to having. And so generic drugs provide a little bit of a kind of overview or a framework for what we're talking about today with biosimilars and interchangeable biologics, but only conceptually. The science is a little bit different. And so understanding what biologics are will be fundamental. So what a biologics is and how it's different is an important thing to convey. So biologics are much more complex in size and structure than our traditional chemical drugs. And when I talk about chemical drugs, I mean small tablet-based pills. And so the size difference is quite immense. And so when you think about this, the size of a biologic medicine can be somewhere on the order of 800 to 1,000 times larger than a chemical drug. And that's important to understand about how these drugs are administered to the body and how the body sees them. The other part of that is the complexity of these medicines. And so biologics are largely protein-based products that are much more complex than our traditional medicines. And so those two concepts are important to understand. The other one is that biologic medicines are going to, and the biosimilars that will serve to replace the biologics once they come off, the biologic come off patent, will be things that will be highly similar but not exactly the same as referred to earlier. But again, I emphasize the fact that these products have been rigorously tested by the Food and Drug Administration to see the quality of these products. So again, to describe what biosimilars are, so we've outlined a little bit about biologics. Biosimilars and interchangeable biologics are granted authority to the FDA to approve. So there's two standards to meet. One standard is biosimilar. The other standard is interchangeable biologic. So just to give a quick overview of what that means, a biosimilar meets a certain standard, which means that it can be used in practice and it does not cause any clinical effect to a patient. It should not show any adverse problems to a patient. It should be a good standard. For an interchangeable biologic, it meets a biosimilar standard, no clinical meaningful differences, including looking at switching back and forth between the original product and this proposed interchangeable product, and also showing that there's no significant differences in safety or efficacy. So when this product is approved as an interchangeable biologic, it will have been vetted significantly through FDA's process, looking at switching back and forth and the safety. And so that will be understood when these products come to market. And so I'll skip over the part about some of the provisions of the bill. I think you guys are clear on what the provisions of the bill are. I will wrap up and touch on the fact that these are going to be highly important medicines for patients. These provide additional access for affordable, cost-saving medicines for the Alaskan patients. And so, in closing, this is truly a patient-first bill in front of you today, improving the lives of patients for very, very serious chronic medical conditions, and also providing additional cost savings for Alaskan patients. I thank you for your time, and I'll open it up for any questions.
Senator Matricki.
Question. Through the chair, does Amgen produce biologics and biosimilars?
Through the chair, we do. We have a robust pipeline of both innovative medicines and biosimilars. We're developing 9 biosimilars currently.
I think three total questions, Mr. Chairman.
Please continue.
The second one is, I just have a sheet here that says no two biologics are exactly the same, no two fingerprints are exactly the same. So are different batches of biologics that are produced from Amgen also not the same?
So the batches, it's a good question. The batches can have slight variability. But what we say is that when you have a batch-to-batch production of a biologic medicine, the manufacturer has specific controls in place to manufacture those in a tight spectrum to make it a tight manufacturing process. And so they have to be rigorously tested. There's additional scientific criteria, and they also have a long history with manufacturing that same product. So the slight variation can happen, but it is within a very, very tight, narrow window. So it does not cause effect, and we have to clarify that because that is understanding when the FDA reviews those products and those changes. When we talk about biosimilars, though, we're talking about significant kind of development of a biosimilar based on a novel product. So they take the original product and they create a biosimilar process from scratch to make those new biosimilars. So it's a little bit distinct from batch to batch.
Last question, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Matricki.
Rand Corporation predicts biosimilar savings of $44.2 billion from 2014 to 2024. Express Scripts estimates potential savings of $250 billion in that same timeline. It's a 500% difference, which is fairly significant. My main question is, why is there savings? It sounds like you have to go through the same process. Are biosimilars not as rigorous a process? And if not, where would the savings be enjoyed?
Good question. So, and I apologize for not clarifying that in my opening statement's remarks. So the way the FDA looks at these products is there's already an established, safe and efficacious reference product is what it's called. So these biosimilars have to meet a standard of comparable safety and efficacy. They don't have to establish new safe and efficacious standards. So they are meeting the safety and efficacy standard that was established by the previous reference product. So in that process, there are some cost savings in terms of the development. And that will be realized, hopefully. We've seen cost savings in Europe on the order of 20 to 30%. And so, again, some of this will be, it's very rigorously tested, but it is a comparability of showing a similar safety and efficacy profile.
Okay. Senator Van Emmel.
So I have a couple questions. What are the benefits of switching back and forth other than costs?
So these medicines will provide additional alternatives for patients. So switching back and forth will provide some flexibility in terms of physicians when they look at different medication options. These products will not be exactly the same in terms of profile. We've talked about that a little bit. And so it will provide some considerations outside of purely cost when you look at what the best product is to use for those patients. And so, again, when prescribers make these decisions for their patients, they will be able to establish what's the best product, and they will have multiple products at this, you know, at some point in the future to pick from. And so purely having multiple options with slightly different profiles that may, you know, make a better quality product for a certain patient will be also an option.
So yes, I think that, you know, with more genetic research that we're doing, we can, I see the trend is to fine-tune medications for the person. So that leads me to this question is, what can happen in 3 days between the time that the pharmacist dispenses an interchangeable biologic and the time that the doctor is notified?
So I'm not a subject matter expert on immunogenicity or those concerns. What I can tell you is the concept of how kind of the immune system will respond. And it really won't be, what we don't predict is that you'll see an immune response from a patient in a short period of time. The reason for the idea around some of this communication is really so that if there is a concern at any point in the longevity of a patient's utilization of these medicines, there's just complete and accurate medical records. What we don't expect to see is concerns or issues or adverse events that happen quickly after a patient moves from one biologic product to these interchangeable biologic products, purely based on the fact that they've done extensive research looking at moving back and forth between those. So we do not expect to see that within a time frame, a short time frame, that you're going to see significant issues. That being said, the communication is key after the dispensing, because we want to ensure that those communications have occurred, that patient's medical record is up to date, so that we don't have to go back and try to track down what happened if anything were to occur, irrespective of how rare that may be.
Thank you. Senator Begich.
In the document that Senator Maticki was referring to, it speaks to potential for savings from 0 to $137 million. Mm-hmm. Was there any projections done for the potential savings to the state of Alaska that might accrue from this shift or change?
Not to my knowledge. I don't know. I don't have those off the top of my head or on hand in terms of savings for Alaska.
Be nice to know.
All right, Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Sherman. When do you anticipate the FDA approving the interchangeable biologics?
It's a good question. I think it's a little open-ended at this point in time. FDA did just put out their guidance around interchangeability recently this year, so in January, giving manufacturers a good kind of guidepost on how they're going to assess and do the clinical research to attain interchangeability. We've also heard testimony in the public space from manufacturers of biosimilars seeking interchangeability at this time. So they are communicating that they are in discussions with the agency over interchangeability and what that will look like. However, I can't give you a specific time frame, because those are private conversations between FDA and the sponsors that are developing these medicines. I will say, though, in a recent conversation, some of the agency representatives from FDA did say that they hope to see interchangeables in a very short time frame. So, again, I know it's not a hard and fast date, but I think we will see interchangeables in the near future.
Yes, follow-up, Senator Gitzel.
Thank you, Mr. Sherman. So, I guess the question this begs then is, what's the rush of this bill if we don't know when these are going to be categorized as interchangeable biologics? And why would one want to speed up that process of FDA approval, understanding the complexity of the disease processes they're addressing, mm-hmm. and the complexity of these medicinal products?
Okay. Good. Thank you for the question. So the rationale behind introducing the legislation at this current time is that it doesn't only clarify the use of interchangeable biologic products, it also makes clear of what a biosimilar should not be used as. So the understanding here is that an interchangeable biologic can be substituted by the pharmacist. What it also helps to clarify is that biosimilars should not be used in that same fashion. Biosimilars currently are marketed and available in the United States, being administered to patients as we speak. And so I think the urgency here is that as the biosimilars are coming to the market and being utilized by patients, there needs to be clearly defined rules on appropriate use of biosimilars, equally on the appropriate use of interchangeable biologic products. To your second question regarding the speed, I'm not sure if I completely am clear about the question about speeding up the approval process. Can you clarify that question?
Yes. If we don't know when the FDA is going to be approving these, mm-hmm. why don't we just simply wait for them to be approved?
Apologies, thank you.
It could be 2 years.
Yeah, so I appreciate the clarifying. So like I said, interchangeables are coming, but again, we need to clarify and provide rules around how to use biosimilars as well, which are currently on the market. And right now in Alaska, there is nothing in the state law and the Pharmacy Practice Act about either a biosimilar or an interchangeable. So as Senator Hughes discussed before, there can be an impact if a pharmacist doesn't have clear ideas about how to use either of these two products. In addition, multiple biosimilars are currently under FDA review at this time, and we could see a robust increase in that number this year. There's 13 applications in-house with the agency right now under review, so we could see a much more robust and engaged environment in terms of the marketplace for biosimilars. So again, I say this isn't specifically going to just clarify interchangeability and interchangeable biologics. It will also help to clarify how the appropriate use of biosimilars should be conducted in Alaska.
Senator Geisel.
Mr. Chairman, actually I have a question for you. Will the Board of Pharmacy be presenting or available to the committee at some point today?
And I'm... That is something that we can definitely ask questions to for follow-up and see if they can present.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hanks, for your testimony today.
Thank you, Chairman.
And with that, we'll... we will go to the phones and take a caller for Mr. David Charles in Anchorage.
Hello, this is David Charles. I serve as chair of the Alliance for Patient Access. Thank you for the opportunity to join you today. I just want to make sure that my line has been unmuted. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir. Please continue.
So I'm a neurologist. My practice is in Nashville, Tennessee. I use biologics in my practice, and the Alliance for Patient Access is a national organization. We have several hundred physician members across various specialties, including neurology and rheumatology, dermatology, oncology, and so forth, and many of these specialists use biologics. To reinforce a couple of things that have been said today, biologics are really revolutionizing, you know, the care of people with a host of conditions, including cancer, types of arthritis, inflammatory bowel disease, multiple sclerosis. I mean, this group of medications is just, in many cases, phenomenal, and they provide treatments where we didn't have treatments before. Just to endorse Senate Bill 32, I think that, that you have before you provisions in this bill that are truly excellent. I agree that there was some back and forth and struggle in the past between physicians and pharmacists about the medications and how substitution would be handled. I guess I should disclose to the committee a potential, I guess, conflict. My father's a pharmacist, and I grew up working in his drugstore. So even though I'm a physician now, I have years of experience working in pharmacy. So I understand sort of the give and take between, you know, the physician sometimes feeling like they need to do dispenses written and the pharmacist also questioning about, you know, notification. So just to sort of step through, I think the most important part, the FDA kind of has in sense two types of biosimilars, those you could think of as the regular biosimilars, and then the ones we've been discussing today would be the group that the FDA would determine to be interchangeable. So a lot more information will be presented to the FDA to conclude that a biosimilar is interchangeable. So what we're really talking about today for the substitution for the pharmacist to be able to substitute really are only those that are interchangeable. Now, you know, with that, I think many physicians may be comfortable with the pharmacy doing a change. But I think your bill got it right because it does keep in there the ability of the physician to write dispense as written. If the physician or patient individually knows something about their care, maybe some of the medications that they're on, I think you're taking the right step to preserve that, you know, interchangeability. Another thing I believe that the bill really has struck the right balance is this notification. I mean, if you just imagine yourself as the patient and there's going to be some change made and you're talking about a medication that's being used to treat something as serious as multiple sclerosis, cancer, and such as that, you know, if you're just thinking of if you're the patient and some change is going to be made, would you want to know? Well, of course you would. And would the physician want to know? Absolutely. And so I agree with the earlier statement that so long as the pharmacist communicates you know, if I were to prescribe a biologic to you and it was an interchangeable one was available and the substitution was made, just notify the patient, notify the physician. I don't have to be notified in advance. If it's an interchangeable one, I don't have to, quote, give approval in advance, in my opinion. I think the Alliance for Patient Access and our physician members would say that let's compromise and have the pharmacy give timely notification, 72 hours. I definitely want it in my record so that if anything did happen, I could look at the patient's record and know exactly what they got. There wouldn't be any question there, so that this communication, I believe, is essential. It has to happen. But I believe that a notification within a reasonable time frame, your bill says 3 days, I believe that's reasonable, would be well accepted by most physicians, specialists who use biosimilars. And that's what we're finding in bills across the United States as well, striking this balance of compromise, if you will, between physicians and pharmacists. And I certainly can see both sides of that. The defense is written part, something you definitely want to keep in your bill. I don't think it's going to be used that often, but you as a patient would definitely want your physician to have that ability. If it were medically necessary, there was concern that it needed to be there. So those are really the bulk of my comments. I'd be available to answer questions.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Charles. Next up on the line, we have Dr. Philip Snyder. Dr. Snyder, just please state your name and affiliation for the record, and you have about 3 minutes.
Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes. My name is Phil Snyder. I'm with the University of Arizona College of Pharmacy. I appreciate the opportunity to testify before the committee today, even if by phone. Alaska is the only state I haven't been to, so I was hoping to come up there, but maybe next time. But anyway, I'm also a past president of the American Society of Health System Pharmacy, which represents more than 42,000 pharmacists that serve on the board of the International Pharmaceutical Federation that represents 3 million pharmacists globally. I serve as chair of the advisory board for the Alliance for Safe Biologic Medicine and Medicines, which is a group of patients, physicians, pharmacists, manufacturers, and both originator and biologics, biosimilar biologics, and others that are working towards the safe introduction and use of biosimilars. The Alliance has been working on the biosimilars issue at the state, federal, and international level for about 5 years. Now, biologic medicines, as we've heard, help patients with some of the most serious chronic and conditions like cancer, rheumatoid arthritis, diabetes, Crohn's disease, and MS. Copies of these medicines called biosimilars are becoming available in the U.S., and they have the potential for new therapeutic options for these patients at lower costs. But unlike generic versions of more simple chemical drugs, biosimilars are not exact duplicates of the reference product. And indeed, the complexity of biologics and the proprietary manufacturing processes mean that these copies can only ever be similar and never the same. Even the smallest structural differences between a biologic and a biosimilar can have a significant impact on patients, including reduced efficacy or unwanted immune response. For these reasons, regulators, including the FDA and the World Health Organization, have made it a priority to name these products distinguishably so inadvertent substitution is less likely to occur and any problems can be traced to the correct product. So with biosimilars, it's critical that everyone, physician, pharmacist, patient, and regulators know what medicine the patient is actually receiving. So what will SB 32 do? The current Alaska law provides no clear pathway to the substitution of biosimilar drug products. Therefore, the pharmacist would need to require advanced approval from the prescriber before they are allowed to substitute an interchangeable biologic for a brand name biologic. This legislation will remove that requirement. It will allow Alaska pharmacists the ability to dispense safe and less expensive biologic medicines to patients by allowing the substitution of an interchangeable biologic for the prescribed brand name biologic. SC32 protects patients and ensures that only FDA-approved interchangeable biologic products may be substituted without prior prescriber consent. This is similar to substitution requirements of generic substitution. Physicians will retain the authority to write dispense as written, which is identical to the authority they have with generic substitution. It provides the pharmacist who receives the patient or prior consent in order to make a substitution. Because biologic products differ from generics in complexity and are not identical, the legislation ensures that there will be a clear and timely communication between pharmacists and prescribers to ensure patient records reflect which specific product has been dispensed to the patient. Pharmacists will have up to 3 business days to relay this information on which medication is dispensed so that all providers have an accurate patient medical record. Having an accurate patient medical record allows providers to assess the patient's response to a particular treatment, including proper attribution of any adverse events to the correct product. It helps us make informed treatment decisions. Maintaining these records for at least 2 years will aid all of us in post-marketing surveillance and learning more about how they work. So why does ASFDN support this legislation? It provides a clear substitution process by which pharmacists can dispense an FDA-approved interchangeable biologic without first seeking approval. It will increase access to lower-cost medicines for patients. A large coalition of branded manufacturers and generic manufacturers and associations, many provider and patient groups, along with the largest pharmacy benefit manager and some health insurance, agree on the language of this legislation. This legislation is similar to legislation that has been passed in 26 states and in Puerto Rico.
Dr. Snyder, if you can...
In summary, the Alliance for Safe Biologic Medicine supports this bill because it removes barriers to low-cost medicines and increases treatment options while recognizing the need for transparency and communication among healthcare providers to ensure patient safety when using these promising new medicines. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on this important legislation.
Thank you, Dr. Snyder. Next on the phones, we have Mark... Guyman, if you can state your name for the record and your affiliation.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Mark Guyman. I'm the Director of State Legislative Affairs for the Arthritis Foundation. We're the largest national organization helping people in this country with arthritis, including 110,000 people in Alaska alone. We support Senate Bill 32 exactly as it is. Biologics for the arthritis community are critical. They have changed in a generation the difference for children, in particular with juvenile arthritis, from living their lives in a wheelchair to going out and playing. We want to make sure that biologics are available to everybody, and biosimilars, as everybody has said with the science, offer the opportunity to have new biologics come to market that are proven and safe, but new drugs coming to market that are innovative and hopefully less expensive. And that's more available to people. We want to change those lives, and biologics do that. I'll keep my comments short today, but I wanted to say that we support a post-substitution notification, as it is in the bill, from the pharmacist to the prescriber, because this mechanism that's set up in there right now is consistent with federal law. So the federal law would match up with the state law now by that provision. If there was a change to that and there was a pre-substitution requirement that the pharmacist notify and obtain the consent from the prescriber, would be inconsistent, in fact, with federal law. And if you refer to the Biologics Price Competition and Innovation Act, BPCIA, the law actually states that an interchangeable biosimilar may be substituted for the reference product without the intervention of the prescribing health provider. So we want to make sure that the state law, as it comes into place, is fully consistent with federal law and there's no deviation. So the post-substitution notification to the prescriber matches out of the federal law. So we just want to say that that's consistent, and that's really the way it's been. If you look at every law that was enacted in 2016, for example, all 10 laws, there's everywhere in there is a post-substitution prescriber notice, and we want to make sure that stays there. The way that the mechanism is set up right now in the laws is since we're dealing with medicines that are terribly complex, most are coming from specialty pharmacies, and these are all 100% injected or infused. This is not something that you're going to go to your corner drugstore and pick up. This is not your community pharmacist. These are usually coming from specialty pharmacies. And we want to make sure that the notification is done in two potential ways. The specialty pharmacy probably has an electronic record. So at the moment of dispensing, it's going into the electronic record, and that should be obtainable by the prescriber. If that's not available, the bill also provides another mechanism so that the prescriber would receive notice in a reasonable period of time, either by phone, fax, or mail. So there's a backup mechanism there. There's a default if somebody doesn't have access to that electronic record. So we think that this bill, as it is consistent with the federal law. It provides the mechanisms that we need to protect everyone and allow for the pathway for biosimilars to safely come to market. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Mr. Guyman. Next on the phone in Anchorage, we have Kelly McLeland. If you can... Yes, Kerry?
Kerry McClone. And I'm calling to voice my support for SB 32, a 35-year Alaskan and recent cancer survivor, 2011, stage 4 colon cancer and metastasis to my liver. I was unable to get chemo and radiation because my body would not take it, which leads me to the point of any additional options available and tools that they would have here rather than outside, or 48. We don't want it. Most patients do not want to have to go to or 48 for treatment. And the more options here, the more the doctor has to work with. I was lucky. They removed it from surgery, and I'm currently doing better. I don't know if it'll come back or not, but if I did have it again, biological medicine would definitely be an option. And I've gotten all my treatment here in Alaska, and certainly could continue to want to do that. I know biologics have been used for many colon cancer patients, and the FDA approved biosimilars make it become available in a short period of time. I look at it as a cost-cutting measure for patients and also for the state. I'm an advocate for patient access to medications and ask that you pass the legislation that will allow the access to me and all other Alaskans as a potentially lower cost. Godspeed. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next up at the Matsu LIO is Bob Thomas.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Robert Toms, T-H-O-M-S, and people know me as Cajun Bob. I'm here for myself as a Humira patient. I have rheumatoid arthritis, and I'm also a member of the U.S. Pain Foundation. I'm a United States Marine Corps combat veteran. I was awarded 6 Purple Hearts and a Silver Star Medal. I was on the cover of Time Magazine and Life Magazine for the Battle of Way City in 1968, where I was wounded the first time January 31st and then 5 times in February of 68. I've had chronic pain for years, over 45, 49 years. I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis 5 years ago. I was put on a medication that wasn't a biologic, and after 3 years, it literally almost killed me. I was fortunate enough to be prescribed Humira over 2 years ago, and I went from being bedridden, literally bedridden, and my wife is my caregiver, who's also a chronic pain patient, to enjoying functional life. I'm not 100%, but I'm able to participate in household activities. I can go to the Fred Meyer's to do my shopping. I'm from Wasilla, and I love my pharmacist. I love my doctor here in Wasilla. And Baker's Crab, Humira, I'm fully in support with the USDA Foundation on SB 32. It has changed my life for the better. It's literally saved my life. I don't know how to put it any stronger, Chairman Wilson, Senator Kathy, Senator Natasha, Senator Tom, Senator Peter. It is a miracle drug. But to have the option of having these biosimilars and the other that the arthritis gentleman mentioned, it opens up a new day of hope for rheumatoid arthritis patients and Humira patients. It gives us an option. It gives us a choice. Although the Humira has been working for me for over 2 years, and I seem to get better as time goes by, I don't know that the Humira will always work. I know my doctor prescribed a particular allergy medication. After about 6 months, it stopped working, so she prescribed a similar medication, but another type, and it started working. So I'm looking at the Humira in the same way that, you know, if we have an option, the Humira is working great. But if my pharmacist and my doctor agree that, you know, I should have, could try a biosimilar, I would do it tomorrow. I would literally do it tomorrow. I'm speaking on behalf of myself and the U.S. Pain Foundation. That's been wonderful to my wife and I. And I'd like for my wife to speak, Cindy Caserta. She's a chronic pain patient, and she'll fill you in on the rest. I'm not having a real good day pain-wise. Our barometer's about 28 point something, and that always affects my joints. But the Humira has literally saved my life and let me function again. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. You're our local senator, and we really appreciate you chairing this committee.
Thank you, sir. Next up is Cindy Caserta. Cindy, if you can state your name and affiliation for the record, and you have about 3 minutes.
Okay. I'm also a resident of Matsu Valley, and I thank you for giving me the opportunity to participate. I'm Bob's wife, and I'm a caregiver, and I'm also a pain ambassador advocate for the U.S. Pain Foundation. We all support Senate Bill 32. This bill affects me directly as a caregiver. Before Humira, when Bob was in bed, he nearly died because of an ineffective medication. It affected his lungs and other organs. And during that time, I did my best with the household, inside and outside, the house, errands, shopping, the pharmacy, cooking, cleaning, car care. And as a chronic patient, pain patient myself, it took its toll on my health as well. We have no family here in the valley, and with pain comes isolation. So it's very difficult for us to ask for and receive help. But after Bob got on the biologic, the Humira, he showed remarkable improvement. He was able to care for himself more, help with the house, our pets. We have two little chihuahuas, help with the errands, and I could focus on my physical improvement as well when he got on the Humira. But at some point, we are concerned that the Humira may not work as well for him. If the FDA approves more biosimilars and other medications that we've been talking about today, Bob and every other Alaska resident can benefit by having options. If Senate Bill 32 is passed, patients can make informed choices about other, perhaps cheaper, biologics. And then his doctor and others will be notified within days, and together they can monitor its effects. Again, Bob and I, with the U.S. Pain Foundation, respectfully ask your support of Senate Bill 32 that can give Alaska residents carefully monitored and cheaper options. It will improve the lives of all residents who benefit from the biologics and their families. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, ma'am. And next on the list to testify is Ashlyn Antinoni. You state your name and affiliation for the record.
Ashlyn Antinoni. And Chairman, and I have something written down, I'm sorry. Bear with me here. And Senators, I appreciate your time today. This is talking about, you know, myself and putting my information out there. It's very difficult for me. I know that I don't look like the typical patient that has RA. I'm 44 years old. I'm a brain tumor survivor, a person with RA, and a disease called Sjögren syndrome. With that, these drugs, you know, they're necessary. I'm an Anchorage resident. You are actually, Kathy is my legislative representative. In the past 6 years, like I said, I've been diagnosed with a brain tumor. I've had surgeries. I've taken medication, which controls my RA and my Sjögren syndrome. But at some point in time, just as the gentleman before me said, you grow out of certain medications. So I am in that particular group where Humira is my next step. I battle with pain, swelling, fatigue, eye dryness from Sjögren syndrome, psoriasis, and a myriad of other conditions that are related to my arthritis. And with a vast improvement in my life, without these drugs, my effectiveness to even be here today, I couldn't be. Today, currently, my knee hurts, and it has for the last 6 months. I've got joint pain in this thumb and this finger. And that's called a flare, if you're not familiar with what happens. Sometimes, you know, when you're overtasked, you get something called a flare. Because of these flares, we are leaning towards biologics. An interchangeable option is something that I'm looking forward to. Although I live with these conditions, and it's changed the trajectory of my life plans immensely. I'm proud to say I'm still alive. I'm here, and I'm here to help others because I've been given that gift. There are others that are less fortunate than I am. Just like the gentleman before me, he's bedridden. There are days that I am bedridden, or I have to have a three-hour nap to function. But I do go to work every day. There are better days than some. And I won't quit because that means the disease wins. With that being said, being a patient advocate, you know, I use the internet to help others to deal with overwhelming diseases. I'm not sure if you know out there, there are over 160 autoimmune disorders that are known right now. I have two of 160. On a daily basis, biologics, herbs, vitamins, complementary treatments such as acupuncture, massage, NSAIDs, and SSRI inhibitors, I have to deal with this management daily to manage and function for me, myself, my family, and my friends. Without laws in place that require communication between myself, pharmacists, physicians, and my medication could be substituted without my team knowing. This has happened to me on two different occasions with two different drugs, and it's scary. Luckily, some of the things were in place. Senator, I don't know how to say your name, Vine Ivanoff. I don't want to butcher it. you had a question about whether or not these drugs actually. How quick will the response be if you have a reaction? It's not. It comes on. I took a drug. It took 6 weeks before I had a full body reaction to it. It does not tomorrow. It does not come on. But I've had two drugs, which one is a hormone patch. The other one is Cymbalta, which is used for pain management as well. Be switched over to a generic drug, and not the pharmacist, mail order pharmacist, just filled it automatically with a generic. I, as the patient, would like to have that choice. And without that being said, some of these people will do it on their own or not. And I want to have that choice for myself. If a physician is so inclined to say, nope, you need this particular biologic, you need Humira, period, then you know what? The answer is already there. Fill as prescribed. But I, myself, because of my search and the cost that it cost me to get there to actually find, these tests are not cheap. In order for them to find that I had RA, it was over $10,000, and I am a patient that is not a, we have 6 rheumatologists in the state of Alaska, 6 to 8. That's a very low field. Dr. Botson alone has a 2-year waiting list. I'm a Mayo Clinic patient. I'm a traveling patient. And Minnesota is able to get the biologics.
Mr. Senator, if you can wrap up your testimony.
Yes. So with that being said, there are, I am definitely in support of Senate Bill 32, especially because the cost. And if you have any questions of me, my information, I'm at ashnelly@gmail.com. If you have questions about biologics and things that I'm aware of, please, I'm here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up is Emily Ninon.
Hello. Good afternoon, Chairman Wilson, members of the committee. My name is Emily Ninon. I'm the Alaska Government Relations Director for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. Pleased to be here today in support of Senate Bill 32. Just wanted to mention there's been a lot of information that's been presented so far about the nature of biologics, biosimilars, interchangeable biosimilars, but just wanted to let you all know where the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network is coming, why we're here on this particular issue. This is an opportunity to update our state statutes to keep up with the advances in medical science. Biologic drugs are providing tremendous promise in the treatment of cancer. There are currently no FDA-approved interchangeable biosimilars for those biologics that are being used for cancer treatment. However, there are a number in the research pipeline, so we're looking forward to getting the statutes updated so that when those come online, they can benefit cancer patients. Biologic drugs, as you've heard, are some of the most expensive cancer drugs and others on the market today. And just as generics have done for small molecule drugs, interchangeable biosimilars have the potential to increase price competition on some of the older biologic drugs and result in lower cost burdens for cancer patients. There are 3 basic principles which are important to us when we're reviewing this legislation and the reason that we're here today in support. The first is consent. We believe that physicians should have the ability to either withhold and physicians and other prescribers either withhold or provide consent for biosimilar substitution. Notification and record keeping is the second principle. When there is an interchangeable biosimilar, the prescriber should be notified of the actual biologic dispensed to ensure accurate and enduring patient medical records. And the third principle is safety and interchangeability. The FDA is the sole entity responsible for ensuring the integrity and designation of that term interchangeable biosimilars, and we want to keep that where we feel as it should be for patient protections. It should be up to the FDA to determine whether something's interchangeable or not. And this bill brings our state statutes in line with the movement in medicine. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, I believe we're going to go back to the phone to Barry Christensen. Barry, if you can say your name for the record.
Yes, this is Barry Christensen. I'm a practicing pharmacist in Ketchikan. I'm also the co-chair for the Legislative Committee for the Alaska Pharmacists Association. And currently, actually, our convention is happening in Anchorage. I'm speaking to you from Anchorage right now. Thank you for letting us comment on SB 32. Wanted to clarify one thing one of the speakers said right away, in that actually most pharmacies in Alaska are dispensing biological products right now, mostly in the form of insulin and also in drugs for rheumatoid arthritis. So it is definitely an issue that Alaska pharmacies are interested in. Having said that, currently our association is neutral on this bill, mostly because we haven't had a whole lot of time to digest it, but we will be doing that this weekend here at our convention. We have asked for clarification on part of the naming portion of the bill, which is on page 2, and so we'd like to get that clarified. That's important because our pharmacy systems, software systems, will need to be able to do the correct labeling for the products. That's all I have for right now. I appreciate your time to look at this bill, and we will be there for future hearings to work on this bill. Thank you.
Mr. Christensen, we have a couple of questions. Are you available for a question?
Yes, I am. Go ahead.
Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Dr. Christensen. I appreciate you calling in. I know you're tied up at the conference. Do pharmacists in Alaska right now dispense biosimilars?
Senator, through the chair, it's pretty. We're talking about pretty new territory here. I believe there is some biosimilars being dispensed. One of the bigger ones that's come on market is one of the long-acting insulins. Some of the insurance companies, PBMs, are moving to a lower tier on. So in other words, the patient would be looking at maybe reducing their cost by moving to a lower priced biosimilar. That has been, the kind of the push we see at the pharmacy level, the retail pharmacy level, is some of the insurance companies wanting to move some patients to the newer biosimilar products. So in answer to your question, it's new, but it's definitely going to be part of the future.
Follow-up
question, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Christensen, would an Alaskan pharmacist at this time make a substitution for any of these medications, either a biosimilar or a biologic, without consulting the prescriber and getting affirmation from that prescriber that it would be appropriate to do a substitution?
Senator, through the chair, no, they would not. As of right now, all pharmacists should be getting basically a new prescription for that biosimilar product.
Thank you.
Senator Begich?
Just a question about the consent communications parts of the bill, if you can answer it, and maybe you can't, but how would those work with mail order companies, and would it essentially prohibit the use of mail order for these biosimilars because of the immediacy of the communication piece? I just want to see if there might be an unintended consequence here.
Senator, through the chair, I don't believe that mail order would have any problems complying with the bill the way it's written right now, due to the fact that the information can be sent through electronically through the basically the insurance side of things. So I don't see where mail order would have any problems with this bill.
Thank you for that.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Richardson, for your testimony. And I believe our last person on our list for testimony today is Lisa Hutchinson. Hutchinson?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Lisa Hutchinson. I'm the Northwest Regional Director for the National Association of Chain Drug Stores, and thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak today. To let you know, the members of NACDF operating in Alaska traditionally go neutral on these bills. The only issue we have, and it's a slight concern, is we would like to see the notification change to 5 days instead of 3 days, and we have worked on this in other states as well, and that would be on page 2 in section 4. Our concern is that with 5 days, it gives the reporting window, it gives the pharmacist a little bit larger reporting window in the event that something outside of their control should occur. For the example, perhaps an internet would be down, perhaps no power. It's a standard that we're seeing across the country, but we would just prefer the 5-day notification if that would be possible. And as far as everything else, I think really between Barry and a lot of the other presenters, they've answered some of the other questions that I was going to address. So really, that's my request from the committee.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you very much.
Senator?
Just
to clarify, you said Section 4? Or do you mean Section 5?
I believe it's in Section 4 on page 2, line 28.
Section 5.
We would request that we change that from 3 business days to 5 business days after dispensing. Just opening that window up a little bit to make sure that we aren't operating outside of the law in the event that something happens that's beyond our control.
I believe it's line 28.
So that's Section 5.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, excuse me. I apologize. You are correct.
All right. Thank you again for your testimony.
Thank you very much.
Is there anyone else in the room who'd like to sign up to testify? Okay. Well, that concludes our list of those willing to testify at this time. We'll close public testimony. Are there any amendments at this time? Well, at this time, we'll put this bill aside and bring it back for further consideration next week. This concludes our business today of the Health and Human Services Committee. Are there any member closing comments? Okay. Hearing none, on Monday, February 13th, I'm personally excited that we're going to have Dr. Joshua Sunkist here to discuss the science of addiction. This will be a joint meeting with the House Health and Social Services Committee, and we'll begin at 1:30, and we will have a room change. It will be in our Capitol building in room 106. Thank you for attending today, and thus we are adjourned at 2:52 p.m.